Welcome to the Wolfner Talking Book in Braille Library Podcast. Enhance your patron experience as you join us for the latest information, educational resources, and engaging interviews with the people working behind the scenes to ensure all Missourians may read. We are so glad you've joined us.
Hello, my name is Brandon. I'm a reader advisor here at Wolfner Library, and welcome to the Wolfner Library Podcast. With me today are two of our volunteers, Paul Otto, Paul, you are a monitor for us here, and Tom Stever, who is one of our narrators for Wolfner. So welcome.
Thank you.
All right. Who wants to start? Let's kind of start with you, Paul. Or who's been here longer?
That's not fair to do that.
Who wants to start and kind of just jump in and kind of tell us a little bit about yourselves and what brought you to Wolfner as a volunteer?
Well, mine will be shorter, so I'll get that out of the way.
Okay, Paul.
I began volunteering and as a narrator, et cetera, back in 2005, and then would take little hiatus times off in the time. But the last few years, I've been both a reviewer and a monitor.
Okay.
And right now, I'm monitoring three different people.
Okay.
And Tom being one of them.
Mm-hmm. All right. Tom Stever, welcome. And what would you like to tell us a little bit about your history leading up to us here?
I came here after an interest. A friend of mine, Caroline Ward, who is also our veterinarian, is a reader here.
Yeah.
And she had mentioned that, and I thought that sounded interesting. I come from a background in broadcast, and so I reached out to Randy, who was directing at the time, and asked him if they needed any volunteer readers, and he responded. We had an interview. He and I talked, and I did filled out an application, and I have been reading since then. That was probably, 2.5 years ago,
okay.
Something like that. I lose track of the time, but I think I've been here a little over two and a half years.
2.5 years?
Like
okay, 2.5 years. How many books have you narrated?
Let's see. We started with Murder in Macomb, and that was an interesting read. Let me see. Then I believe the St. Louis Baseball Reader after that, was lengthy. I think that comes out to over 20 hours, if I'm not mistaken. But a very interesting book, especially if you're a baseball fan.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, I think it was Worst Case Colin, which is one of my favorite books. And I'll talk more about that if we have the opportunity.
Yeah, sure.
And then, let's see, after that we did the Scoundrels of Missouri or something. It was like the criminal element that coming into Missouri, which actually talks a lot about the Civil War, the border conflict between Missouri and Kansas, slavery. But mm-hmm. That's how it gets into some of the criminal element in it was in Missouri, and that's the premise of the book, locally written.
Yeah.
So that was an interesting read as well. We will finish shortly the current book that we're on called The Switch.
The Switch, okay. And The Switch is about?
It's about a kind of a cataclysmic electromagnetic pulse that happens. We never really find out what that is, what caused it. But it takes out everything electronic, and it's set in near Portland, Oregon. The main character is maybe 13 years old, something like that. And it goes through his adventures. He faces all of this very bravely, and in the course of The Switch, his father is missing, and there are no communications because everything is down that way. So it's all word of mouth, and so it follows his adventures in looking for his missing father.
Okay.
And we're actually, even today as we speak, we're doing this on the 10th of July, and it is probably today that we will finish reading that.
Well, good. All right. So one thing we'll kind of start with, and I don't know the answers to this. I don't know how you all do things. Are books assigned to you all as far as what's going to be read, or do you all get a choice?
It's I would say a hybrid. Paul, correct me if I'm wrong, because number one, there is a shelf of books that need to be read.
Yes.
And so we can go and choose from them with Brandon's guidance. Brandon seems familiar with all of them. So with his guidance, we'll look into that and see if there's something that interests us. That's one way. The other way is if I'm approached by one, it was approached by Randy sometimes and now Brandon, and he says, could you record this book?
Yeah.
And actually, we're in the middle of another book that was interrupted when Brandon asked us to do the switch. And so I had that slipped my mind, that other book. But the so in that case, it was Brandon that approached us.
Okay.
Asking if we would read the book. Now, there is a book, I think it might be one of the next ones that I'm going to read, that was written by a friend of mine.
Oh, okay.
And he happens to live in St. Louis. The book, I just received it. It was delivered yesterday to me. So that is one that I think we'll be taking on maybe in the near future.
Okay. Well, cool. So it's kind of a hybrid thing there.
Yeah.
You get the book, Paul. Or you guys know what book you're going to record. What is your next step as a monitor or?
Well, we both get a copy of the book, and the monitor's job is to make sure the narrator's in the booth, the reading booth, and then to work the computer equipment that runs the system that will record Tom's reading.
Yeah.
And plus, you have the book also out there. And so once you start the recording, you have to read, you're not watching, the WAV file anymore on the computer screen. You're looking at the book because you're responsible for tracking what the narrator says, make sure he or she is correctly not missing words, and it's very easy to leave an S off the end of a plural. And, you know, those things are just very common, very easily done. And the narrator stops it, said, let's go back and get that done. There will be pronunciation issues, especially in regard to proper names, because in the same families they can pronounce their last name differently, the corrections can be made there. And then as we go along, usually the monitor doesn't say too much about the emotional tone given to the, especially in fiction books, the different characters, how they're being presented. And I'm spoiled here with Tom because he knows what emotional, and he'll go back over sometimes things three times where there was no mistake, but he's not getting that character just right. And and that's really to the benefit of our readers.
Okay.
And I don't, you know, I can't tell what he's up to, but I just let him do that until he's satisfied. And then at the end of the session, I'm responsible for recording on the book where we've stopped, so that when the person reviews it before the next session, he knows how far we've gone. And second, then when the next session comes around, if there were any corrections that Tom and I missed, then we do those corrections first, and then Tom gets in on the narration. So it's really, it's where the monitor well, he's essential because, or she's essential because they're working the computer equipment. Really, it's all in the aid of the narrator. The narrator's the, okay. the star.
Do you do a lot of starting and stopping? Just kind of curious. I know when I've recorded things, like if I say something wrong, yeah. they stop me and I kind of recreate it then.
It depends on the person. I don't have to stop Tom very much because he catches himself.
Okay.
And there's another a woman I do monitor. It's rare that she makes them. I mean, really rare.
Yeah.
The person that reviews her books tells me she says, you know, she's got one mistake maybe. and the other person I do is monitor. She's always very well prepared.
Yeah.
And Tom can tell you how preparation. I think each person's different mm-hmm. as to how they prepare, but most of the time, I think they have to read it over several times.
Yep. Yep, and I was going to ask, do you read the book prior, or do you go in blind?
Just I don't have other things to do.
Okay, I got you. Yep. All right, Tom. So where do you start with it? You get the book.
I get the book. And there are some times, of course, when I'm handed a book, and I go in and I start recording it.
Okay.
Well, then I take it home after that session, and I continue to read it. And for me, it's... I think I could read it and read it and read it, and it might not make any difference in the recording of it. Mm-hmm. So I read it. I like to read it once. I like to be familiar with the material, with the quotes, with the characters. I try to go over the characters in my mind and see what would this character, you know, what's their approach, what's driving them, and how might that sound?
Yeah.
So there's a bit of theater.
There's more than a bit, I think, for some.
my pastime is, for instance, I walk here to from my home, and I listen to audiobooks.
Okay.
So I'm a big fan of audiobooks, and I think that I listen to performers who do audiobooks, and I think that, man, I wish I could sound like that, or I wish that is he. This person gets into that character so well, and you're reading from the point of view of both genders, so you really have to keep that in mind. In the current book we're doing, there is a spirit, a young lady who has died, and her spirit is in the head of the main character, so she converses with him.
Okay,
I like to make that sound as if the listener will be aware that it is this person who is speaking to him in his head, because it's not always explained that way. It's in italics in the book, so the reader can see it, but I like to make it sound that way. So Paul mentioned that we maybe take several takes, mm-hmm. and it's kind of those cases. So it's the fiction books that have dialogue in them that require this going back and forth, in and out of character, and trying to bring these characters to life for the people who are hearing them. Paul is masterful at catching, number one, mispronunciations. Now, it sometimes is a mispronunciation, or it is a difference of opinion.
It's
how
true.
Something should be pronounced. So what we do is we take a break. And we look it up and we say, you know, this, I don't know if you've ever used it, but a pronunciation guide on the phone, on the internet. It's out there. They tell you how to pronounce stuff. Sometimes it's a British person, doing the pronouncing, and you wonder, well, is this a British pronunciation or American pronunciation? So there are several ways that, and we like to get it, we like to get it so we're comfortable. With it. I would say so that Paul and I can agree on what a pronunciation is going to be. And as Paul pointed out, place names, person names, we really like to, especially in the nonfiction pieces, because you're talking about actual places that are out there. Murder in Macomb is a nonfiction work. introduced myself to the author early on in the reading process of that. And I had him on speed dial, if there is such a thing now.
Yeah.
But I had him in my contact list so that I could contact him. And I did frequently. He always took my calls and always was helpful about what the drugstore name in Macomb, Mississippi, how that was to be pronounced.
Yeah.
Because it was not familiar to me. But of course, if anyone in Macomb, Mississippi was listening to that book, they would know that right away.
Yeah.
Or the elementary school in Macomb, Mississippi, you know, on and on. Or the name of the attorney who was representing. So it just goes on and on. And he was very helpful and very, made himself very available to answer these questions that I had quite frequently.
Well, that's good.
I know sometimes we'll run across a small town, even Missouri or other places, and just call the city hall.
Yeah.
Yes.
Or
the Casey's.
Yeah.
You can just... You know, get a hold of anyone in the small town.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And because sometimes people aren't there at City Hall because, you know, they got 2,000 people there. Mm-hmm. But, fortunately, Wolfner's provides, through the computer, you can get to Merriam-Webster's dictionary.
Mm-hmm.
And then, or you can get to some of these howtopronounce.com or other sites, YouTubes.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it never helps when you get two different pronunciations, and that we just work it out. I mean, I don't think
find a middle
taking there. We can't do a British pronunciation. We don't do that here. You know, I just if that's what sounds best or people will recognize, I'll do it.
Yeah, good.
Yeah.
So, what is the toughest thing about being a narrator for you?
Well, just living up to expectations.
Okay.
Because I come from a broadcast background, so people say, well, that should be flawless. You know, I admire the person that Paul pointed out that says there's rarely a mistake, and I feel just terrible about, you know, my performance after that. But it is a performance. You are reading a script in front of you, and the biggest challenge is performing that piece of literature so that it will be a pleasure and an inspiration for someone to listen to.
Very nice. Paul, as a monitor or an editor, what is the toughest thing you kind of tackle on a day-to-day basis with it?
Keeping my mind on listening to the reading and comparing it to the words in the book.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I have always had problems with concentration. And, you know, I'm going along in the book, and then I'm thinking, did I get those moles out of those traps this morning? You know,
and
just stuff that just comes sailing through.
Yeah.
And then I chide myself, and I said, oh, I got to get back to this.
It's almost at times like you're just reading, right? And go off into...
Sometimes if it's a really interesting fiction book, and other monitors have told me that too, they just get so involved with the story, they're not really seeing all the, you know, taking a distance so they can see the mistakes. And when you have a narrator like Tom, who really puts his the characterizations in it so well, it's, you know, it's really a pleasure to listen to it.
Why, thank you. I must say, Paul, and I wanted to go into this program to point this out, but I have the pleasure of sitting across the glass from a person who is very, very well read. Not only that, but very dedicated to putting out material from this library to the people, to our patrons, the people who use this. So he is not only well read; he has a background. He is so professional, and he is he's so gentle in coming to me and saying, no, that was not what was to be, that you didn't read the words on the page. So he's very gentle in reminding me of these things and backing up and doing things over. So he's very patient, gentle, well-read, and professional.
And he's a lot bigger than I am.
That helps.
There's a window. Behind.
There's a glass and a door, and we're good. You've been through, read a lot more books through Wolfner, so I'm going to give you a second to think about it. Tom, do you have a favorite that you've recorded?
I do, and it's really for for a young audience. I mentioned it. It's Worst Case Colin, and it's Colin is a 12-year-old who recently lost his mother in a car accident. Although his father loves Colin, Colin loves his father. The father is an accomplished mathematics professor, and he's a problem hoarder. And this becomes the centerpiece of the book. The hoarding is so bad that Colin has to continue making up excuses for his best friends, Georgia and Liam, not to come to his house. On and on this goes. And what's more, aside from being bullied at school, Colin worries about all manner of things that could hurt or kill him, like being caught in an avalanche or a riptide in the ocean or being attacked by piranhas. These things come up in the book.
Yeah.
He fills notebooks with step-by-step lists, which number into the hundreds, by the way, of ways to survive such worst cases that he always thinks about. It's a young person's book. It's written mostly in verse, which is also interesting. The book addresses grief, mental illness, and that one never knows what another person is going through. What impresses me about Worst Case Colin is its vivid character development. This was done so masterfully, I thought. You could just see these characters out there. They were developed so well, and it was all done in verse. So I think that that was another part of the what impressed me about the book. And it's also a realistic setting. It's in Bullhead City, Arizona, which is a place, mm-hmm. a place right across the border from Nevada. It's just over the, and sitting right on the Colorado River. Worst Case Colin is one of my quicker reads. It's 4 hours, 20 minutes. And I would hope that people would enjoy listening to it, because this is a piece that I got personally caught up in, and I couldn't wait to get back in there and read more of this book.
Yeah.
That was very fun for me.
Very cool. Sounds good. That was a Worst Case Colin.
Worst Case Colin.
Rebecca, is it Capara?
Capara, I believe you have it right.
Okay.
Yes.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Good.
Close enough. But again,
Paul might correct
another,
me.
You know, how would Rebecca say that name? That's what we're interested in.
Paul, you've got a bigger library of books that you've monitored here. Is there a favorite that kind of stands out for you?
No.
No.
And the reason is I have a bathtub mind.
Okay.
When I get done with a project on a day or whatever, pull the plug and it just all drains out. And I can't remember titles, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm lucky I remember names of the people I work with sometimes. But it just goes out. They're all I can't remember any that I really dislike. Recently, Leslie LePage and I had to go through a book that was
difficult.
It was overly simplistic, I think.
Yeah.
Now, and I'm not going to give the name of the book or anything, but most of them, the history books are interesting, mm-hmm. especially the ones about Missouri in the Civil War.
Yeah.
There's one book I reviewed as opposed to monitoring, which followed the story of right at the beginning of the Civil War and wanted to give examples of how families were split, and this the protagonist, which is the woman, the daughter of the parents, she one of her brothers was Union and one of them went to the Confederate, and she was always worried about both of them, and she had to walk a line where maybe she helped one and then the other helped the other. And and how did that play out? And it gave me a real better appreciation of how Missouri was so split, and not just politically, but just personally, in families. And I can't remember the name of it, but I think that was one of my favorite because it really brought me to a personal realization.
Cool. Thank you, Paul. Do you guys have any other anecdotes kind of about the recording process that you want to share? Or
what Paul was just talking about, I reminded me of another book, and I did not mention that among them. I forgot it. But I think Paul and I agreed that when we got maybe a couple of sessions into the book, that for both of us, and I won't mention the name of the book, but it seemed it was a bit of a disappointment for both of us. We agreed that, you know, perhaps it could have been, you know, there were interesting parts of it. It had its moments, but for the most part, we were kind of glad to get it behind us.
Yeah,
I guess every book, but every piece of literature that we get our hands on and go into the booth with, it, everything has a redeeming quality to it.
Everybody has a story to tell,
yes,
so to speak. There. Well, thank you, guys. I appreciate you all coming in here and sharing with us.
Thank you, Brandon.
Thank you, Brandon. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Wolfner Talking Book and Braille Library podcast. For further inquiries on this episode, or for library service needs, you may contact us toll-free in-state at 1-800-392-2614. Out-of-state callers may reach us at 573-751-8720. By email at wolfner@sos.mo.gov, or visit us online at www.sos.mo.gov/Wolfner.